happened as a result of the study. And this is on page, one more character here, Pasuk Yudalit, on page 16, that's verse 14.
I can write in this, can't I?
What?
I can write in this, can't I?
You own it?
No, I'm, yeah, of course, but I was just...
Why shouldn't you be able to write it?
Because I thought, I'm sure when I was in school, you should never write in a holy book.
Yeah, you can write in it.
As long as you can't cover a word. High school, that's King David High School.
Yeah,
you
can't
cover
a word.
Yeah, it must be one.
Of course, they don't give you much of a margin there, but...
Yeah. No, just to write the words.
Anyway.
Thank you.
Yes, no problem.
Thank you.
It is there. We're up to Pasuk Yudalit, where it's interesting, of course, that God does not ask the snake, you know, anything, right? He doesn't say, you know, why did you do this, right? So Adam, he says, what did you do? What went on? The Chavli says, what did you do? What happened here? And the Nefesh, she just talks, right? Because obviously the Nefesh, according to the Malbim, at least, we saw the Nefesh has no free will. So therefore the assumption was that it's just, you know, a tool, and the tool which is obviously very dangerous. So therefore, because God comes to Nachash and says, you know what, we're going to change your nature. So he says, Vayom Hashem Elokim LaNachash, God said to the Nachash, again, this is mercy and law, Ki Asita Zos, because you did this. Aru Atah, you are accursed. You call the Hamah more than any animal. The Hamah is usually a domestic animal. We call Chayat HaSadeh and all the non-domesticated animals, which are out in the field. Agichon chosei lech, you'll go on your belly, the way Arthur has it, but afar tochal kol yimei chayecha, and you'll eat dirt all the days of your life, or eat dust. And it goes on, ve'tozit tetzvah, 15, ve'boz shiz beincho ben ha'isha, I'll put enmity between you and the woman, which of course was his initial contact with the woman, Ubein Zarachon, between your children, so to speak, Ubein Zarah, and her children, who Yeshu call Rosh, man will step on your head, pound your head, Rarko has it, that tells you Shemana Okeim, and you will bite his heel. So obviously, Yeshu call means to attack, so the same word is used for the attack of human beings on the snake, and the attack of the snake on the human beings. So the Malbim on this on the punishment of the Nachash of the snake says, he wants to say that not only was the Nachash himself cursed, the snake, but he wanted that also all the other animals were cursed. When it says Aruah Tami Kol Behemah, you are cursed from all the animals. It means together with the animals, they're all brought down together with you. Because since everybody's going down a notch, Adam's going down, Chava's going down, the Nefesh is going down, everybody else is going down too, right? And he wants to say, moreover, that the non-domesticated animals, the Chayos HaTzodeh, were more cursed than the domesticated animals. How so? So he says, the rabbis say, that in terms of the time of pregnancy, of gestation, so an animal is, I'm not sure exactly what he's saying yet, why this is more. He says, you don't have it?
I still haven't found it now.
Gimel, paragimel, plus of tensvah. Well, actually, we're on going back to Yudalit
here in Olive.
I'm not sure I understand exactly what he's saying here. He says that the kind of the way the Nefesh was punished, the rabbis say that the gestation period of a snake, I don't know exactly biologically this track, but the gestation period of a snake, the days of its pregnancy, are 7 years. Whereas regular animals, behemoths, you know, cattle and such like, it's a maximum of 1 year. So somehow that denotes a greater curse for the Nefesh and, I guess, all the other non-domesticated animals over the domesticated animals. So on the other hand, the domesticated animals, he seems to say, have an advantage, to a certain extent. Well, I don't know why there's such a great advantage, that they get eaten by human beings. So I guess the advantage is not for the animal itself, but rather that they can be used for higher purposes. Animal doesn't gain by being eaten, as far as I know. Yes?
If the snake had no free will, meaning it behaves because God chooses what it behaves like.
No.
Wait. If it has no free will, snake has no free will.
Yeah, but the sacrifice statement is actually.
Okay, so if something has no free will, then it's doing things based upon its nature, which is nature is given by God. So God knew the snake was going to do this because it had no free will, had no choice. So when God is lowering its level along with anything else, he's giving it even more of a punishment, but why would that be? It seems almost like God is angry at the snake, but how can you be angry at something that you created if you created it to do a certain... Like, if I create something to do a certain task and it does that task, how can I be angry that it did that task?
Because you're electric.
That was what it was made to do.
Right. The way the mouth was trying to treat it, although I don't know if this is satisfying, but he says that it's because that since everybody's being brought down, so there by definition, there has to be a sliding scale. I mean, everybody's being brought down together with men. So therefore, you're right. It's really not so much a punishment for the Nahash as opposed to the natural byproduct of the going down.
He's being downgraded more than other animals.
Yeah, so the fact is being downgraded more than animals because by the animals themselves is an inverse relationship. Meaning, the higher the animal, since the Nahash was the miscreant here, so therefore he's being diminished the most. He's being shot down from, so to speak, the high roof to the lowest basement. But here, lowest to the pit, is the way Chazal put it. And where everybody else is less, you know, is less punished, so to speak. So he is being punished more because of what he represented beforehand being so high, now it's going to be brought down to the ultimate low. That is, for the entire capacity which a Nahash had before, is completely lost. You know, what really bothers me, has bothered me all the time in this process for many, many, many years, is why God has to bother speaking to the snake. And the snake has a dialogue with other, but what's the point of speaking to the snake, especially since the moment after God finished speaking to the snake, we assume the snake no longer had the power of speech, because that was that for him, right? So why bother that speaking to the snake at that point?
So be angry at man forever and bite him.
What?
Because snakes bite people. So if he tells the snake that, you know, I'm punishing you, then the snake has this deep subconscious resentment, even though he's not intelligent enough to know why he likes to bite people. Now, since it's so subconsciously inclined to him from God, he now is at this lower level, but he still maintains what he was told, that he will be fighting the kills of people.
So why does that have to say that?
Because it ingrains it into the back of the snake's head.
Okay, so what you're trying to say is that, like, just like the world of what you are saying, it's just like the world was created by God's statements and endowed with its nature by God's statements, so too this is what caused the snake to be downgraded is God's statement. Which is good, except why does it say then El HaNachosh? But he spoke to the snake. Because it said Al HaNachosh, he spoke about the snake. But what's the point? When he said let there be light, he didn't speak to the light. When he said let there be animals, he didn't speak to the animals, right? So why does he have to say to the snake? He has to speak to the snake and tell him this. Yeah.
Doesn't it say that sometimes the Yetzer Hara turns around to Hashem and says to Hashem, I think we should test this guy. We should say, look, he's doing your mitzvahs. Now let's test him, put him in hot water and see whether the next succeeds. So perhaps isn't the snake a representation of the Yetzer Hara? So he's showing that he can talk, he speaks to the Yetzer Hara, and the Yetzer Hara, because of what the Yetzer Hara did, he's showing you that he speaks to the Yetzer Hara.
That's good interpretation on an allegorical level. But let's assume for a moment that it's not allegorical but practical. In other words, God is speaking to the snake and telling the snake something, not just because the snake is the Yetzer Hara, which may well be, but because the snake is, you know, Mr. Snake, and now he's going to lose his status as Mr. Snake. So, I don't know.
It's also, if the snake is able to speak, and he's intelligent enough to be able to speak to man, men and women are still around, sitting around next to the snake. So, if God didn't talk to the snake, but the snake all of a sudden just, you know, went away, and then he talks to Eve and says, you're going to be punished because of this, and he talks to Adam, you're going to be punished because of this, this way, then they might wonder, well, why didn't he reprimand the snake? You know, the snake, you know, they feel that justice wasn't necessarily served, and they would think that God was unjust because he didn't punish the snake who started the whole thing.
I like that.
So that they had to see, they had the, it wasn't that the snake needed to be told, it's that they needed to hear God speak
right.
to the snake.
That's very good. What Ron says is very good, and I think it's probably true. Which is that, and this I never thought of that. That the reason he's speaking to the snake is because, not because the snake has to hear. Not relevant whether the snake hears or not. It's because this was the, all three of the what you call it, the defendants. What?
Culprits.
Culprits, okay. All three of the culprits were being judged together, right? So therefore, to see that justice was meted out the way it should be, right, so therefore God spoke to the snake in order that the other two should hear what the punishment of the snake was. Also, perhaps they feel better because they're not going to get as punished as the snake. There's one advantage. They say, I'm sure after they said the snake got punished, they said, uh-oh, what happens to us? And then God, they were probably somewhat, you know, comforted by the fact that they weren't stricken down on the, to slither on their stomachs. And he served all the rest of the for all their life.
Okay,
yeah. Well, how's that so bad? He's got food everywhere he goes. That's the difference. Yeah, right. There's
abandonment. Like, I don't care about you
anymore.
Yeah. You have all the stuff you need.
But there, by the way, this passage doesn't say that they'll have their food everywhere they go. When it says, offer yourself, it doesn't mean it's going to eat dust, in the literal sense. It means, isn't that the most famous line in movies? Eat dirt?
My dust.
So the, it means that he's going to be low, a low and base creature. That's what it
means. Well, could it also be saying that, so Shem spoke to the serpent, and, you know, so you know, on the Makaba, they were saying, you know, they would see that, you know, that the punishment would be handed out to the snake, and then they say, well, at least we were not as punished as they are. But then again, though, well, this is what could happen to us, you know, because see, the big guy upstairs, he's capable of...
This might happen next, of course, you better be
more.
Careful, right?
Yeah.
So it's not bad. Okay, so you never can tell what's going to happen to you, so you better be on your guard from now on. Okay.
A corporation, you know. Like tattoos and haircuts.
Okay, yeah. So
I was thinking about this, the fact that it doesn't seem that either Adam or Eve were like angry with the serpent because the serpent did the serpent sent them to do this. Except when Hama says the serpent deceived me, that could be, but it doesn't seem to be angry. So maybe Hashem would be trying shouting at the serpent. I imagine she's shouting at the serpent, and Adam and Eve listen to that punishment, and they feel guilty because someone else didn't punish because of what they did.
You think there was a funny party with the snake?
I think so, definitely. Why not? I am very
good. I don't know. If somebody got me in trouble, I'd be pretty upset.
Definitely, but they knew it was not the fault of the country.
Why wasn't it the fault?
Because they wanted to do it.
Yeah, but each one just passed the buck. The man passed the buck to the woman, the woman passed the buck to the man.
He was doing a creation for Hashem, which was, as we said before, supposed to serve them and leave the world and serve Hashem. So when they realized Hashem was punishing one of his creation because of them, because of something which they did, no matter what is the degree of culpability to the serpent, they were seeing how the serpent was
deciding. Now, I'll come towards you halfway. I can't agree with you all the way, but I think that the second point you're making is good. I mean, the first point you're making, I don't see that in the cooking, that they were buddy-buddy with the snake.
Why not?
You don't see it either. You're just saying, well, we don't say that they reprimanded him or anything. That they rejected it.
But it's very logical that they were by with every creation of Hashem. It was their creation. They were just created. They were right there. I mean, why would they have any problems?
The fact we don't see they have any problems doesn't mean that they were necessarily buddy-buddy with them. We don't know if Adam had a great relationship with the giraffe. You know, there's not that what was going on at the time. It's not clear from the Chumash at least what was going on. So I don't know. You know, it could be, but I don't think you have significant proof for it. But what the
fact, I think that the fact that she named them, it seems that they knew them very well. So when you know a person, you have to have a good relationship with him.
Okay, maybe. But the other part of what you say I like better, which is that the Chazal say the Nachash was created in order to serve man, and everybody was supposed to have two of these great snakes, to go and do all sorts of good stuff for them. So therefore, this is part of the punishment given to Adam and Chava, that this great servant which they were going to have, the snake, is gone, right? Now it's not a servant anymore, it's an enemy, right? Yeah, they were supposed to have the snakes helping them out, bringing them precious stones and jewels, the way the other Rebbe Nelson said, and now they're not going to get precious stones and jewels from the snake, but the snake's going to be an enemy that they have to constantly avoid and be afraid about. Right, so it's part of their punishment. I like that very much.
Like that. Why would the serpent be created? If the serpent was created to be our servant, why did God create the serpent to be so cunning? Because he wasn't evil. He just was.
Yeah, he's got to find the tool. He's got to know where to look.
The serpent has to be smart.
Yeah, he's got to be smart.
So
yeah.
His smartness was used to say, "Apple, go for it."
Right. That was part of the tool. It was a smart, it was a smart car. Oh, and that was kind of chip.
Maybe. The serpent did find the jewel which was the fruit from the tree, but they did not realize that jewel was prohibited.
The what?
The serpent did find what the serpent was looking, which in this case was the fruit from the tree they could not eat, but they did not realize that they could not assess everything, because the serpent might not be able to judge correctly what is the fruit them or not.
In a serpent's job of finding jewels.
He fulfilled the job. Yeah. Here's what I think. Maybe, but I want to tell you there's a chazal which says, of course, a very famous chazal, which says that the person who tells Russian horror is like a snake. Because just like a snake gets no benefit when it bites somebody, doesn't eat the person, right? There's no benefit. So therefore, so to a foul Russian horror, a person doesn't get any benefit from what he does. So the Medrash is not saying, because that was the Gemara actually, it's not saying that the snake doesn't enjoy biting human beings. It might enjoy it very much, but it doesn't benefit from it. So the same thing of somebody tells Russian horror, I might enjoy and relish telling the gossip, saying over the gossip and bad things, but he doesn't get any tangible benefit from it. And that's part and parcel already of the Nachash's sin, which is, of course, the Nachash didn't eat from the tree. Right? The Nachash pointed out the tree, the Chava, who then pointed out to Adam. But, he's a real loser, right? He didn't even eat from it after all was said and done. Right? So, but the Nachash's purpose, you're right, is not to, even his purpose in bringing about the sin, or if we can say that a purpose, but it was not that he himself should gain, but rather that the others should lose, right? That's why the rabbi said he was jealous of Chava, right? He was jealous of Adam who had Chava, so therefore he lost that, he was willing to Adam and Chava to lose their stature, even though he didn't stand to gain anything from it himself. So that's Chazal say, that there would be no benefit from it. He could have enjoyed enticing Chava, but there's no tangible benefit from it as a result. And of course, therefore, all these things which are being told to him in this puzzle are, you're gonna go down on your belly, and you're going to eat dust, and you're going to bite. They're not things from which you're going to get any benefit. Rather, they're things which are simply the Nachash does because it's his nature, and it could be he enjoys it as well. But that's not something from which he derives any benefit. All the curses are that it's going to be doing things which are not beneficial to it. Okay, so that, I think if the Nachash would have eaten, whether it's to have free will or not, let's leave it aside for a moment. But I think if the Nachash would have eaten, probably would have been a less heinous crime. Because, he also has a desire. But this way, he didn't have the desire, he didn't eat, and he's making all of them in the Chavar. Okay?
Here we're making the assumption that the character wanted to create a problem for them. Maybe we could say that it was not the intention of the serpent to create a problem for them, but she was only doing her job.
True, I understand what you're saying before. I'm saying that this is, instead of bringing the stones, he brought the apple. I understand. But the Chazal, there is an opinion of Chazal that says that it was intentional in the Bar Mitzvah. Okay? So I'm trying to explain according to that opinion. Anyway, so of course then we have this enmity, which occurs between the man and between a woman and her children and the Nachash. And then we go on to the woman. So what happened to the woman is, Elisha Amar, to the woman Hashem said, Harba arfe itzbonech. I'm going to increase your suffering very much. Rashi says that, and I mean not the Rashi, the Malvin says that at this point he was, became susceptible to a menstruation. The menstruation was not a factor beforehand, I don't know why not, but I guess it wasn't inherently nature and part of the nature of woman, but now this became part and parcel of a constant aggravation which he's going to have. That is also in her pregnancy, yeah.
Whoops. Al Haisha Amar Halba.
El
Haisha Amar Halba. Okay, so I can understand. So the woman, he said,
Arba Arba.
Mother Halba Alba.
It means I'll increase greatly. Whenever it says to have a double language like that, it means it's a double emphasis.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a very,
very, very.
Yeah, very bad. Arba Arba Tonech Veheronech. You are, you know, the menstruation cycle which leads to the pregnancy. And then the Esed Tel Dibonim. With in pain, like he says here, you shall bear children. And your craving shall be for your husband, who yim shalvach, and your husband will rule over you.
Wait.
Yes.
In the passage before, where it says, I'll put enmity between you and the woman when you're talking to the pain, and between your offspring and her offspring, what does that mean? Why just because snakes and people don't necessarily get along, but men and women. Why is it specifically say I'm going to put enmity between snakes and women and their offspring and his offspring? I don't understand what that means.
I think because the snake's interaction was with the woman, not with our other. Chava's the one who entices the other.
So this doesn't imply the men.
Excuse me? The no, fight all the children, which includes all subsequent men as well.
Oh, right, okay. But it didn't apply to Adam.
That applies to others too, but the idea with the focus on the woman is because the woman is the one that the snake had the interaction with, so therefore the punishment is also depicted as being vis-a-vis the woman.
And are we to understand that it means that snake people won't get along from now on?
I think so. What else are we, how else are we supposed to understand it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that a snake becomes a special, a special danger, a unique danger, which is very difficult to be, to avoid because, you know, they're still flying, they still slither, and they're still difficult to see. So therefore that actually becomes instead a physical danger to human beings. Like not a spiritual danger, more than a physical danger. And that's what's coming to play. So we're in the middle of the woman here. So she said, Hashem said, you're going to have difficulty with menstruation, with childbirth, and then with pregnancy, with childbirth, and then you're always going to have cravings for your husband. It's a very powerful punishment, right? In fact, the powerful punishment we have to understand, though, in the context of what the new plan for the world is going to be, right? In the new plan for the world, things have to undergo gestation periods, meaning the way Chazal describes Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden, is that the give us somewhere a play-by-play how man was created in hour X, and then Chav was created, let's say, hour 1. I remember the exact breakdown of the day. Hour 1, the man was created. Hour 2, woman was created. Hour 3, they procreated. Hour 4, Cain and Hevel were born. Hour 5, they were, you know, they sinned. Hour 6, they were punished, and so on and so forth throughout the course of the day. So, what happens, the way Chazal described it is, on Mechava, they went to bed as 2, and they came out of bed as 4, meaning Adam, Chava, Cain, and Hevel. There was no gestation period. There was no pregnancy. Everything happened immediately, right? So that obviously is in Gan Eden. What? I don't know where else. Maybe it's a metaphor, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
The Rambam says the reason why Hebrew is called Lashon HaKodesh, the holy language, is because there are no terms for sexual activity and sexual organs in Hebrew. They're only euphemisms. There are no actual, you know, the terms you have, say, in the English one, which come from Latin, most of them, they don't exist in Hebrew.
So what is, if you don't want me to ask, Zion?
Zion is a letter.
Okay, well, it's also something else.
Slang.
Yeah. Oh, slang?
That's slang. It's modern Hebrew slang.
Okay, so I learned all the slang.
You learned modern Hebrew slang.
I was in Israel for 4 years.
Oh, yeah?
In the army, nonetheless.
Okay. Right. You were in the army?
Yeah.
For 3 years? Full 3 years?
I did two about 2.5 years.
Okay, so you sure know all this time. But is
the punishment for the woman that your craving shall be for your husband, is that saying, he's saying to her, saying, I'm going to increase your suffering for childbirth, and you're going to have all the suffering when it comes to that area, and when you have kids, it's going to hurt. And so you think she'd be like, okay, fine, I'm just going to stay away. I won't have kids, you know, it's going to hurt. I'll stay away. But yet, you will crave your husband, and you don't want
obviously
to
have kids. Right, that's obviously the idea, the context. There's an interesting Meshech Chochma. The Meshech Chochma practice says the Meshech Chochma is the Or Sameach, like an intake of the Yeshiva, as I point out whenever I quote him. The Meshech Chochma says that the reason why the command, the mitzvah, Puravu, be fruitful and multiply is only for men and not for women, is because the Torah would never compel, it's not right, it wouldn't be right for to compel women to put themselves in a life-threatening situation. Right, because the guest to become pregnant and give birth is, you know, a very life-threatening situation. So then the Torah says, look, we won't command you to do it. Right? We can't do that. We'll command man, because for a man, it's no sweat off his back. But for a woman, it's very difficult, so then we can't command her. However, like Ron is saying, nevertheless, the Pasuk has a Lishech Chukah saying, the Pasuk is saying that the nature of woman is to be willing to undergo the sort of pain in order to have this relationship with her husband. So, yes, it's part and parcel of it. Yeah.
One question. What does teshuv katech mean?
Your desire. Cheshek in Hebrew.
Yeah.
So the other point is that what I was trying to make before is that the catalysts always speak about things which develop over time as ibur, as pregnancy, right? If you have a trait in creation, a spiritual trait of creation, which has to develop over time, that's called ibor, the pregnancy or gestation period of that trait, until finally it's born, right? And that actually, the fact that things are not immediate, as they were in the Garden of Eden, is reflected in the idea of pregnancy. Everything which happens in this world has to have some sort of preparation period, right? And the preparation period is painful, right? And as the Gemara said, it's not quite the same thing, but it's an appropriate parallel. Mishus Torah Meres Shabbos, Yochal B'Shabbos. If you work on Friday, you'll eat on Shabbos. The implication is, if you don't work on Friday, you're not going to eat on Shabbos, right? So therefore, it doesn't mean work for money, it means prepare for Shabbos. So therefore, the idea is that this whole world is only accomplished not just the woman's birth, that's a microcosm. But the whole world is a world in which things have to be conceived, and then there's a painful process by which they are developed, until finally, so to speak, the thing is born and comes to fruition. So therefore, when the woman is told this, she's not just being told that, you know, this is your particular punishment, but rather, this is not the way the whole world is going to be shaped. You know, the woman obviously would start with the menstruation period. Menstruation period means, you know, half the month the woman has this off limits or whatever it is, a week, 2 weeks, woman is off limits. And obviously there's a symbolism there too, which is the relationship between man and woman is symbolic of the relationship between husband and wife. It's symbolic of the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people, right? Humanity in general, the Jewish people right now specifically. So therefore, instead of being always tight, so to speak, there's going to be a cyclical thing. In other words, Hashem is sometimes close and sometimes far. Sometimes close and sometimes far. And that's why also the Jewish people are likened to the moon, because the moon waxes and wanes. And so too, the relationship between Hashem and the human beings with the Jewish people specifically, is more intense, less intense. More intense, less intense. So all these things are the way the world is going to be conducted from now on. Of course, the idea of a Yishech Shukotech as well means that just like the woman yearns for a husband, the yearning of Am Yisrael, again, humanity in general, Jews in specific, would be to Hashem, right? And that's why we want always a striving to get back to the situation of the Garden of Eden. We're always trying to get back to the situation where everything was always tight and everything was always immediate, but obviously it takes a long time to get there. Yes.
And isn't that expressed in Kriyat Shema when they say Kadosh, 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 like Hashem is like really, really far away, but then when you say Baruch Kavod, Hashem Min Kamo, you know, where Hashem is really far away, but then again Hashem is also really, really close with us, you know, when God is not in Kavod, he's right next to us.
Mm-hmm.
And some people might think that the reason why we sit down with when we're saying this is because Hashem is right here, and if we're diving a lot of Kavod, Hashem is right here, and we're so overwhelmed by his presence being right here. He's away, but he's also here as well. We're so overwhelmed by that, so we sit down.
Isn't that bad? You just came up with that?
No. It's about Schwab, and I don't know who he quoted.
But that's before, during the time when you say Kadosh, Kadosh, and Baruch during, before Shema, that's when you sit down. You're supposed to specifically sit down. Yeah, it's not how obviously required, but it's a proper thing to do.
And also, one other thing, isn't that what we were just talking about with, okay, it's no longer the Garden of Eden, but now we have to, now we have to struggle, and there's a lot of pain that comes along, the temptation period in life. Because isn't that maybe Hashem's way of saying that we're instead of human beings, we're like human becomings? You know, that's our way of, you know, like little us, it's our way of finding our way in the world. Because if we, you know, if we were just given everything, we wouldn't have a chance to become. I mean, there would be no challenge.
Did you just make that up too?
No.
Isn't your human beings and human becomings?
No,
I never heard of
it. I really want to.
Why?
Yeah. I think it's
creative. I like it.
Human becoming. Yeah.
I
think I'm trying to think who it was. It wasn't ancient poet. I don't remember. It might even be Rabbi Backer.
Yeah.
I'm trying to
think. Hey, human being is implies a static, you know, state of being. Whereas a human becoming would imply a state of constant growth and, you know, and ascent. Not bad. Okay? Mm-hmm. Well, okay, whatever came out of that way, creative.
Somebody greater than me.
Yeah.
I got a question. I think I shared what the concept of the measure that's mentioned according to the measure of the team. So how do we see the team reflecting on the of the
the rabbis say that we're the Adam of Chava to withstand the test and not eat from the Eitz HaDaat sinfully. They would have been given it with permission either on Shabbos or after Shabbos. I forget what it says. So here, the leader, connected leaders, they couldn't wait. So therefore, waiting periods are being imposed upon them. Moreover, Chava tried to mess up Adam, right? Because she's going to came there and said, you know, well, she was jealous. She said, well, if I ate, you know, he's the only two, right? Let him, I'm dragging him down with me. So therefore, again, you know, to correspond to that, she was given this, you know, this, what's the word I'm looking for, this, so to speak, submission to Adam. So then Ari Kaplan writes this. I just want to say that I thought about this before I saw an Ari Kaplan. He does say, which makes it more authoritative,
yes,
which is that the idea of the evolution of, you know, feminist movements and all that kind of stuff, it reflects the fact that we're getting closer to the Geula. How so? Because the state of, you know, of women in submission is a direct result of the sin of Chava. And the sin of Chava ultimately should be eventually rectified. So when it's rectified, so then women will not be certainly as inferior or as submissive as they are today. So therefore, they sense that already, the women, and since they sense it coming, so therefore they themselves, although they don't know exactly why it's coming, they reflect that in their aspirations to ever greater equality with men. Okay,
it's
an interesting idea. Yeah.
When I went to England after I was in Yeshiva last time, from Israel, I had a non-Jewish friend, and he asked me a very good question. He said to me, if the Torah is authentic, how is it that the world was created? Because Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel, where's the women? How did they have any more children? They didn't mention any more children.
They alluded to other
beings or something or other?
No, well, the rabbis say that they were twins. That's what they say. That Cain and Hevel had twins who were born with them. As a matter of fact, there's one medrash who says...
the one medrash says
that Cain was jealous of Hevel, because with Hevel, two twin sisters were born. So he got two wives. Well, Cain only had one twin sister born there. So he had one wife. So he was jealous. What?
How can you relate to this?
That's what the rabbi said. That's why it says in Vayikra that having relations with one sister is called a chesed. It says there you shouldn't have relations with your sister because it's a chesed. What does it mean? It's a chesed. So the Gemara says, I'll say Hashem did a chesed with Cain and Hevel that they were allowed to marry the sisters because otherwise what would ever develop, right? But afterwards, that is no longer permitted.
How can you relate to
what?
Cousins are technically allowable, so then Cain and Abel children could marry each other.
Right. What's about that first two generation? What are your problems?
How could you relate that to somebody? You can't relate that by text.
No, you can't relate it by the text. You have to, I thought you didn't need to have first of all that, but in our religion we hold that first of all doesn't work without first of all that.
Right. Well,
but I have another explanation where it says that Cain, they sent them out to go mate and make babies. They sent them out away from them, meaning that there was something else there to mate with.
Yeah,
something about Adam had concubines of some kind, but then you said there's only Eve, so where are these concubines coming from?
But I know that there's such a question, but my answer is what, really, the answer to your friend is that, and if the Bible's not authentic, you understand how it works, how did all of a sudden people, the human race, before that, the animals moved from asexual reproduction to sexual reproduction. Mm. How do the X and Y chromosomes know to separate and to recombine specifically when this procreative act occurs? I think that's the whole reproductive system is the greatest evidence against, you know, random evolution or even, you know, whatever else, from mutation, these things wouldn't happen on their own. It's impossible.
He told me his explanation for it.
Yeah.
Which you learn in school. Okay, he said to me that basically what he learned in school was that Cain and Abel had relations with the mother.
Cain and Abel went to Christian school?
He went to Christian school. They had relations with the mother because the law hadn't been given yet that you can't have relations with the immediate family. So that's why they didn't know that there wasn't a law saying that you couldn't have relations with your immediate family, and that they have relations with the mother, and that's how the law started.
Ah, I guess if you don't have first of all that, you don't have the oral law, then that's the only thing you can come up with. There is no other.
But it makes more. It's a lot more understandable than
because it mentions Eve and doesn't mention the sisters.
Yeah.
Rabbi.
Okay.
When you're talking about mother, brothers, and sisters, their cousins, is it acceptable to say we don't know how it was that the next generation came out? Or do we have to say, well, here are the answers that we have?
No, you can say we don't know. But that doesn't take away the right to hypothesize.
When you talk about the oral law, are they making hypotheses about how these things happen? Or are they saying this is how it happened?
Well, I don't know. It's a good question. You certainly don't have to believe it in the sense that this is not one of the 13 principles of the Rambam, right? But it makes sense in terms, it may well be a tradition. It might not be a tradition. But in this case, it happens to be that it works out well not just with here, but it works out with that verse in Leviticus, in Vayikra, which says that relations between brother and sister are chesed, are kindness, which makes no sense.
Because they're
kindness? Yeah, look
at the
I'm not making this up.
So you're forbidden to marry your sister because
of it is kindness. Because it is a kindness, yes. I'll show you. On page 650.
So is it kindness or it was a kindness?
Well, that's the question I discovered. I thought it's 650, but it's not there. It's on page 668, okay. Yeah, on page 668. Plus design, verse 17. So note the article of mistranslation of this, of course. It says in the Hebrew, the Isha Asher Yikach Esachoso Bas Avivo Bas Imo 668. If you have relations with your sister, either by a father or by a mother, you see her nakedness, she sees his nakedness. Chetehu. It's a chetet. Therefore they're so kind to each other, they're going to be eradicated. They're going to be annihilated through Chorus.
The chances
are great. I know the chances are great. But you see, he actually does bring down this chazal in the Burra Barn. Disgrace, really the word means kindness, a strange term in relation to incest. It is intended to answer the question, if it is immoral for a brother and sister to live together, then why did God permit Cain and Abel to marry their sisters? The answer is that it was a kindness for God to allow that so that human race could go on, actually, so the human race could be launched. But that was so that he actually brings that down over there. That's right. Okay, so wait, we didn't get to go very far, so I'm sorry about that. I guess I will finish this half.